Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Some big stuff in Columbia this weekend. It's time for the annual True False Film Festival. We'll preview it tonight on the show with David Wilson, talking about all the movies, music, and more with the 12th year of the festival. Also, the MU Recreation Center is hosting the NIWBP National College Wheelchair Basketball Championships. We'll talk to the Mizzou coach, Ron Likens, and one of the men's team's top players, Rockbridge grad Carter Airy. National championships in wheelchair basketball and the True False Film Festival. Lots to do this weekend, and we'll tell you all about it on Thinking Out Loud next on KBIA. Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. This is one of those weekends that reminds us how great it is to live in mid-Missouri. So much going on, and tonight we'll preview a couple of the choices that you have. Later on tonight's show, Coach Ron Likens and Mizzou's wheelchair basketball teams host the national championships. Teams from all over the country, including Mizzou, competing for a national title. We'll talk with the coach and with Carter Airy, one of the team's top players. First, though, the True False Film Festival has grown since it began into an event that gets worldwide attention from the film community, and it's something we look forward to every year here in Columbia. David Wilson stopped by to give us a look at what we can see, hear, and experience this weekend at True False. All right, it's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA this weekend, one of the big events of the year in Columbia, the annual True False Film Festival, and one of the co-conspirators, one of the guys that's helped put this thing together from the very beginning, David Wilson, joins us. And David, always wonderful to see. I know it's a busy time, so thanks for taking the time out to visit with us today.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Let's start. I always feel odd asking you this because it seems like we've had this conversation, and I know people have a basic familiarity, but just talk real briefly about the purpose behind the True False Film Festival.
You know, we started this fest back in 2004, and our goal was to fill what we saw as a void. We thought there were really amazing nonfiction features coming out, movies that were theatrical and thrilling and had great storylines and great characters and just happened to be true. And they were getting some play in theaters, but they weren't necessarily getting their due in the film festival world. And we thought, maybe there's something there. Maybe there's a need for this new documentary community to have a place to come together and really celebrate this kind of filmmaking.
And it's become, obviously, something that caught people's attention. The world of nonfiction or documentary filmmaking has really kind of evolved since 2004 quite a bit.
Yeah, it's been great to watch. And, you know, it feels like as the community has grown, as this sort of corner of filmmaking has grown, True False has really been right there with it. And we feel like we're part of the center of this world now.
David Wilson with us, True False Film Festival. It's truefalse.org, all getting started this weekend. And, man, let's get right to it. Talk about some of the films, because I know there's always there's a long list, and you can find the complete list, the schedule of everything at truefalse.org. But I know there's always at least a few that you're especially excited about bringing to us.
It's true. And, you know, we say, like, while maybe not every movie is for everyone, we think there is some movie for everyone. There's something there in that lineup that's going to grab your attention, that's going to really excite you. Of the films that, you know, I want to mention right now, I think I'll start with one called Tales of the Grim Sleeper. This is a true story of a serial killer who terrorized South Central Los Angeles for close to 20 years. And he's been caught, but a lot of questions went unanswered. And so this filmmaker, Nick Broomfield, who has a famous history going back to stories about Heidi Fleiss and Eileen Wuornos and Curtin Courtney, Nick goes in and, with the help of an intrepid local guide, a really hilarious woman named Pam Brooks, he tries to get to the bottom of this story. Not just how a serial killer could live in a neighborhood for that long and operate, but how he could live in the city and what the police department were doing at the time. And really, I think, paints, in the end, kind of gets to a very fresh and very current kind of take on race and policing in the United States. But along the way, there's some real thrills and suspense as well.
Always stories that seem to come right out of what's being discussed in the news at the very time. And so that's kind of a part of what this is all about, isn't it?
Yeah. There's another one called Of Men and War that's some French filmmakers who came to the U.S. And, you know, sometimes having that outside perspective helps you see something more clearly. And they look at a fairly innovative treatment center for veterans with PTSD. And this film does a better job of really unpacking what PTSD is, how it affects soldiers, how it affects their families, than anything I've ever seen. It's an incredible film. It was at the Cannes Film Festival last year, and now is just now coming to America.
We're talking with David Wilson from True False. You mentioned this was a Cannes film. Some of these are films that are not necessarily well known. You're not bringing Star Wars in here, but ones that have been recognized and are pretty prominent within this world, right?
That's right. I mean, it's everything from Sundance Hits. We'll have the Audience Award winner Meru there, which is this just a great mountain climbing epic adventure story. All the way to stuff like we're showing something called The Jinx, which is actually an episodic TV show showing right now on HBO. And it's I think of it as a long-form documentary. It's 6 episodes. It's a mystery thriller about a billionaire who may or may not have gotten away with murder more than once. And it's made by the guys who made Capturing the Freedmen. It's one of my favorite documentaries of all time.
We had the folks in from Third Goal last month and talked with one of the filmmakers about the fact that I've got, for all intents and purposes, a halfway decent for personal use video camera on a little tablet I carry around with me. The equipment is getting more accessible, and the filmmaker that was on our show last month with Third Goal talked about kind of a democratization of filmmaking as a result of this. For you guys, obviously, it all starts with a story, but there's also still the importance of good filmmaking. And are we still seeing that even as everybody and his dog is out there with their iPhone taking movies?
I think it's actually an equal response. I think that we see more and more people able to make movies, which I think is fantastic. You know, we want everybody to have a camera, everybody to be out there making movies. But because of that, we've also seen filmmakers really start to push the craft forward. Say, well, look, if everyone can carry a camera around with them, what can I do that's different? How can I take this form forward? Well, we'll show a film called Those Who Feel the Fire Burning. And it's a spectacular film that uses a sort of drone camera in a way that I've never seen anyone do, makes it almost a character in the story, in a nonfiction story. And it's the kind of innovation that I think True False really champions.
David Wilson with us. Again, the website is truefalse.org with a listing of all of the films there. One of the things that's listed in the big list of films, 5 or 6 different secret screenings. Tell me what that's about.
Sure. These are sort of a fun thing we started a few years back. These are films that have yet to have their world or international or U.S. premiere. We're showing them sort of before we're supposed to. And the way we get around that, or the way we work with that, is that we color code them. We reveal very little information up front about what's in the movie. And you have to sort of roll the dice and take a chance. I think we have a great lineup of secret screenings this year. I think you can get a little bit from our descriptions. So if you feel like diving in, yeah, check out one of those and jump in.
David, one of the things that has become more and more over the years a part of this festival, in addition to the films themselves, is music. And I know you've got a lot of great musicians coming into town this year, too.
You know, it's been the sort of stealth part of the festival, but maybe not anymore. It's every screening at True False opens with live music, but those musicians then stick around. They play every night. We have 3 or 4 concerts every single night of the fest going on around downtown Columbia, each featuring 3 or 4 bands. Some local, a lot of national, international bands, really amazing stuff, from the experimental cello playing and looping of Paul Rucker to the kind of New Orleans street, you know, washboard and bass of Yes Ma'am, to a group called the Como Mamas, who are a 3-piece gospel group from Como, Mississippi. Oh. Not Como, Missouri, but yes. Como, Mississippi. And it's a real spectrum of live music, and I think it's going to really impress people.
Why have you made that a part of this? Is it just about getting as much entertainment to people as they come into your house?
You know, I think we want to create an experience. We want to create something that can't be replicated, that is a unique moment. And that's how we think about True False Weekend. You're going to go through the whole weekend. You're going to watch movies. You're going to see music. You can go to parties. You're going to go to panels. There's a parade. Everything about it, when you come out the other end, shouldn't be anything you could have matched on your own.
tell me a little bit about some of the events. I mean, you mentioned the panels, and I know that you always bring in some really interesting people to have discussions.
You know, there's one I'm super excited about personally. For the first year, True False is doing transmedia work, and we have three pieces at the fest, two of which feature the Oculus Rift technology, this new virtual reality goggles and headphones you put on. You immerse yourself in a world. And here are filmmakers, journalists, artists using these to tell nonfiction stories. You know, we've seen stuff like this in terms of video games, in terms of science fiction.
Right.
Now we're getting the real world. And one of those is called Ferguson Firsthand. It's by a guy named Dan Archer, who's a visiting fellow here in Columbia at the university. And he's a graphic journalist. He travels around the world. He goes to war zones and hotspots, and he does graphic novels and illustrative journalism. Well, he took a video game engine and went to Ferguson and gathered all of the firsthand accounts of Michael Brown's shooting. And he placed those people in the neighborhood in this immersive video game engine. And you can actually put on the goggles and the headphones and walk around that neighborhood in Ferguson and get a sense of what all those people saw or thought they saw or claimed to have seen. It's a great piece of journalism. It's a great piece of future media. And it's something I'm really stoked about having at the fest.
You know, I've got at least somewhat of an association with the Missouri Journalism School, and that's exactly what people are talking about, is using the latest technology, using new technology with the principles of journalism from back in the Walter Williams days. And that's exactly what it sounds like you've got going there.
Yeah, so you can check out that piece all weekend long at the Picture House venue. That's at the United Methodist Church across from the Missouri Theater. It'll be in the lobby there. It's free. You can walk up and check it out. We're also doing two events, one called From the Art House to the State House and one called Transmedia Live. Both will feature that piece, as well as Transmedia Live will feature the other two immersive pieces. And I think it's a great chance to check out something totally new in the world of documentary.
We're getting a little bit late in the game for this on Tuesday evening, and it all is running this weekend. But for people that are interested in it and haven't already gotten plugged in, talk about getting tickets and how that all works.
Sure. We have close to 4,000 tickets still available. You can walk up and buy them at our box office. That's at the corner of Hitt and Broadway, right there on the south side of Broadway. Also, we have our queue system. You show up at any venue, the bigger ones are better, an hour beforehand. You get a queue number. You come back 15 minutes beforehand. You take your place in line in the order you got your number, and we'll start letting people in. Every single screening at True False will let some people in from the queue. Many at the Missouri Theater and elsewhere will let in dozens, if not hundreds, of people from the queue. It's a great way to see a movie. All you have to do is show up an hour early. Trust in the queue system.
There will be some shows that sell out, but if you want to come in and see some of these shows, you're going to get the opportunity to do that.
That's right. A lot of our shows have no tickets left, hard tickets left, but the queue will work, and it will get literally close to 10,000 people will get in via the queue this weekend.
Fantastic. All right. Again, the website, truefalse.org. So many terrific films and a lot of other fun things happening, and encourage you to get plugged in with that. David Wilson from the True False Film Fest, great to see you again. Thank you for coming out today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. Be sure to listen to the program next Tuesday evening. We welcome in an old friend, Diane Lynch, the president of Stevens College, as we begin a four-part series on Thinking Out Loud, shining the spotlight on some of the colleges and universities in our region. We'll talk about Stevens, about Lincoln University, Columbia College, and Truman State in the weeks to come, starting next week, with our friends just down the street, Stevens College, as Diane Lynch is on next week's show. Next on tonight's show, most weekends during the school year, you can see some great collegiate athletes in action here at Mizzou. But this weekend, some of the finest in the nation in their sport gather at the Mizzou Rec Center for the national championships in wheelchair basketball. It's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. Coming this weekend to the MU Rec Center and the historic Brewer Fieldhouse is a national championship event for wheelchair basketball teams from colleges all over the country. Coming into Columbia, it's all going to start on Thursday with the championship game, Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And joining us to talk a little bit about this event and about the wheelchair basketball program here at the University of Missouri is the coach of the team, Ron Likens, and one of the top players, Carter Aaron. And welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
Coach Likens, let's start with you. This is a big event and a big deal, and just kind of talk about the process of how we got this to Mizzou.
Well, there are seven intercollegiate teams in the United States, and the tournament's on a rotating basis. This just happens to be the first time that's come to Mizzou. We could have had it a few years ago, but I didn't feel we were quite ready to host an event of this nature and do it the way that Mizzou wants to do it. Mm-hmm. So we passed on it, and now the time's come for us to host it. So it's a very big event for us. It's a great chance for our program to get some publicity and to spread the word about wheelchair basketball.
Well, and I can't imagine that there are a whole lot of people that aren't familiar with the facility. I mentioned it's a historic old building. Brewer Fieldhouse was the home of the Tigers prior to the Hearn Center, but they did a renovation back, I guess, 15, 20 years ago. MU Rec Center is one of the great facilities in the country for a university.
Oh, the Rec Complex is a great place. It's so unique, and it's known throughout the United States. And when teams come here to play for the first time, they're just taken back at how great our facilities are here. It's one of the great selling points we have about our program here.
Ron Likens with us, the coach of the MU wheelchair basketball team, along with one of the players, Carter Area. And Ron, talk a little bit about how the program is organized and kind of what we're going to see this weekend.
Our program started in 2005. That was the first time we had a team. We're in our 10th season right now. We're one of the youngest programs that are out there. So we're doing a lot of catching up with all the other programs. Like, for instance, University of Illinois has been around since 1948. Oh. And we'll never catch them in terms of that type of history and tradition, but we're building one right now as we speak. So we're still getting the word out there that we have a program here. People are finding out through our summer camp how well the team's been doing the last few years that, you know, Missouri's a great place to come to. And once they come to campus, see our facilities, learn about the academic opportunities that they have here, see what the program has to offer, they're hooked. So we're doing a better job recruiting, getting better players in that.
Most of your players, kids from Missouri?
No, unfortunately not. Our kids are from all over the United States. Hmm. We got three from Utah, California, Phoenix, all these guys from the West Coast are waiting for the warm weather to come back. I told them this is an aberration. So, Lyon is I hate to say it's part of recruiting there, but I better watch myself there. But, we got kids from the East Coast. They're from all over. But then once the kids come here, they become Missouri residents because they like it here so much, and it's a great opportunity for them. And they see what the state has to offer, what Columbia has to offer. They're hooked and want to stay.
And Carter, let's talk about you. You're a Rockbridge guy, so a little bit unusual within this team of a bunch of people from other states, as Coach Likens was mentioning there. Talk a little bit about how you got involved with the sport, though, because it's kind of an interesting story I saw.
Right. It's a weird way to be introduced to the sport, absolutely. But being Columbia native, I didn't know much about the sport in general, but I especially didn't know about the newly founded program here at Mizzou. But I was playing pickup basketball with some friends at Mizzou Rec, and Coach Likens came down and saw my prosthetic leg and that I was playing basketball. I liked the sport and approached me, told me that we had a program, invited me to test out a chair, give it a little shoot around, and I was hooked. Absolutely addicted to the sport. Still am. It's a blast. It's physical. It's tough. I enjoy it.
I was going to mention that as we get into talking about how the sport is different from traditional basketball. I did a story about the team 3 or 4 years ago, and I went in, there's a little inside baseball here, but I went in to get what we call natural sound or nat sound, just to get a little noise to go in the background. And more than anything else, what struck me was when I went in there and just got the sound. More than seeing anything, more than talking to anybody, the sound of these chairs crashing into one another, that metal on metal, man, that really made an impression on me. And I think people, like you say, have to realize it's a very physical sport, like you said.
It is. It's, I enjoy that aspect of it, I could say.
It must have been a tough adjustment going from the basketball you'd been playing to wheelchair basketball.
Yeah, it's definitely different. It's got different components. For example, everybody basketball, you run throughout the game and then can go up for a pretty shot. But in wheelchair basketball, you're using your arms and then have to go up for a pretty shot. So it's kind of a battle of the beautiful and the ugly. That balance I really enjoy. But the strategy of the game is somewhat similar, but it's definitely different. You can use your chair as really more of a weapon on offense to keep somebody out of the play. In able-bodied basketball, picking somebody might last you, give you 2 extra seconds, and wheelchair basketball can last up for, 10 seconds or more. So just different strategy, I guess.
I know a question people are going to wonder. Do you ever just crash on those things?
You take some tumbles once in a while, yeah. I mean, we get them going I don't know the mile per hour on them, but it's not slow. And when you get caught at a weird angle or what have you, I mean, I remember one play maybe 2 years ago, I got whipped into the scoreboard, our score table, ended up with a concussion. So that's about as brutal as a sport can get. But we coach really likes it when we don't play, you know, rough. He prefers the beauty aspect of the game.
Carter Airy with us. He's one of the top players for the Mizzou wheelchair basketball team, along with Coach Ron Likens. The national championships for wheelchair basketball are going to be held this weekend at the MU Rec Center. Coach Likens, when you're talking about recruiting players, talking about coaching this team, Carter mentioned the strategy is different. How is it different from coaching traditional basketball or able-bodied basketball?
There's a couple of differences. First off is the player themselves. What we have in wheelchair basketball is called a classification system, and that's based on the level of your disability. So the more disabled you are, the lower your point value is. Our point values range from 1.0 to 4.5.
Okay.
Now, we have to play five players at a time, but their total point value cannot exceed 14. So when there might be, based on how our roster is set up, if I got to get one player out, I might have to take another player out, a 2-for-1, just because of the point values.
I see.
So the math comes into it quite often, and sometimes that happens where to do that. People are wondering, well, why are you taking him out? Well, to get this guy out, I have to take him out.
I see.
So that's a little bit different there. The second difference is there's no side-to-side play. In able-bodied basketball, if you play a zone, you can kind of shuffle your feet, slide over to a side. Here you can't. You have to turn your chair and push forward. So there's really just the forward-backward motion. Don't have it sideways. And then obviously there's no verticality. Our game's more a game of position, more a fundamental game, where if you once your big guy gets inside, he's going to shoot till he makes it, or he's going to shoot and it goes on, go to the other side and somebody else will rebound. So positioning is very, very important in our game because there's no verticality. You know, in AB ball, you could have somebody get a rebound, a guy can jump up and block it. Once they get that rebound, they have the ball.
Ron Likens, the coach of the MU wheelchair basketball team, and also, I understand, of the U.S. team that's going for the World Championships in 2016 in Rio. And talk a little bit about that.
That's the Paralympic Games. World Championships were last summer in Seoul,
okay.
South Korea,
which
we went to finish second there. The thing coming up in Rio is the Paralympic Games, which will be held about 2 weeks after the Olympic Games. We'll be in the same village, using the same venue. So it's the second largest sporting event in the world.
Wow.
In that. So it's a huge undertaking, and we're very excited to go. This summer, though, we have to go to Toronto for the Para Pan Am Games to qualify. So we have to finish in the top three to qualify to go to Rio. So we're not quite there yet. But that's going to be between that qualification is going to be for the Americas zone. So teams from North and South America will be competing for the right to qualify to go to Rio.
You mentioned 10 schools involved with this. I know of U of I's program for a long time. I had a very good friend that played there, and the fact that Mizzou's is only 10 years old, is the sport growing? Is this something that we might see at more schools down the road?
Yes. Within wheelchair basketball, you have a juniors division, which is basically first grade through high school. And you got all these kids who are going to school, graduating, and then looking to go someplace to go to college. Well, with the seven men's programs that we have now, we can't take all these kids. Not all these kids want to go to one of these seven schools.
Yeah.
So what's happening is you start seeing some programs starting to develop where it might be just a club sport now, or it might be something that's a combination of a community team and students. But eventually it's going to get to the point where new teams are going to develop there and the sport will grow. I mean, there's more and more sports opportunities for persons with physical disabilities out there now than ever before. So all of a sudden now all these kids want to go and play somewhere, and then schools are going to find themselves are going to have to start providing those services.
Carter, I ask anybody that comes in that's involved with athletics, what varsity or club or whatever, aside from the obvious, which is it's fun to play basketball and you're out there with your friends and the team aspect of it, what do you get from participation in the sport?
Well, I'm a Columbia kid, so playing with Mizzou on my chest has like been a dream come true since I was about four. So that aspect of it is really cool. To be a student athlete at your dream school is just something special that you can always hold on to. But more specifically, the sport of wheelchair basketball, it's a bit of a community. You keep seeing the same people over, you know, year in, year out, wherever you go. And the community of people is just, it's just great people wherever you go. It's a lot of talent. It's a challenge every game. And the people are really what keep me coming back and what's going to keep me involved for years to come.
I see there's at least one SEC school involved in addition to Mizzou. University of Alabama, the border rivalry with Illinois, some pretty good rivalries in this, I imagine.
Yeah, we enjoy playing both those teams specifically. I guess we've played Alabama twice this year and gotten the best of them both times, and vice versa. We played Illinois, I think, twice, and we didn't handle that as well as we could have. So throughout the years, we've had great games, close games with both those teams. So, you know, you hit it on right on the money. I think those two are our main rivals for us.
Well, it'll all start for Mizzou on Thursday. They will take on Bama, take on the Crimson Tide, 3 o'clock Thursday afternoon. Again, it's at the MU Rec Center. Who plays when from there kind of depends upon who wins and who loses, like any other tournament. The championship itself game is going to be at... Well, I see 1 o'clock and then 3:15. Is it a double elimination?
No, 1 o'clock's the women.
We
also have the women's national tournament. It's going to be
here. Oh, fantastic.
Their semifinals will be on Friday, and then the winners obviously will go to the championship game at 1 o'clock, and then the 3-4 game will be the next morning. So we're not only it's intercollegiate championships, but also it's for men and women.
Great. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. In the men's championship, we're hoping to see Mizzou there 3:15 on Saturday afternoon. And if people want to find out more, if they want to see a complete schedule or find out more about this team, maybe they're interested in getting involved in the future. You guys are part of Mizzou Rec. I guess you're at the Mizzou Rec website, right?
Correct. You can go to MizzouRec.com/NIWBT, and that'll have information about the games, the live stream. If you're not able to actually come to the game, you want to watch online during work, you get a chance to watch it, and you can keep following up with the tournament that way.
Ron Likens, the coach of the team, Carter Airy, one of the players from right here in Columbia, Rockbridge High School. Good luck to you guys this weekend, and thank you both for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it. Had a good time.
All right, and that is our show for this evening, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Thanks to our guests, David Wilson of the True False Film Festival, and Ron Likens and Carter Airy from Mizzou Wheelchair Basketball. Thanks also to Chuck Graham for his help on this week's show. Next week, we'll start our series focusing on Mid-Missouri colleges and universities, visiting 4 in the month of March. We'll go to Lincoln University, Columbia College, and Truman State. But it all starts next Tuesday with a Columbia institution since 1833, Stevens College, and President Diane Lynch. You can hear past Thinking Out Loud shows on our website. Go to kbia.org and click on Thinking Out Loud. And remember, you can follow Thinking Out Loud on Facebook and Twitter as well. Just search for KBIA, Thinking Out Loud. Next Tuesday, Diane Lynch and Stevens College. Till then, for Associate Producer Trevor Harris, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.